Have you ever thought about what happens when, like, a temple wants to build something big, but the city has rules about how tall buildings can be?
Oh yeah, that's a recipe for a good legal battle.
Totally. And today we are going deep on one of these cases, from Hawaii.
Aloha.
Exactly. It is Korean Buddhist Day, Wonsa Temple of V. Sullivan.
Yeah, this is a classic case where you have two important things kind of bumping up against each other.
Right, like on one hand you have the freedom of religion, which is like a really big deal.
Phew.
And then on the other you have these rules about land use and zoning, like we need to be able to plan our cities, you know?
Right, cities would be chaos without it.
Exactly. So, in this deep dive, we really want to like break down the legal arguments, see how the Hawaii Supreme Court thought about it all.
Yeah, what were they thinking?
Right, and what this case tells us about, you know, how we balance religious freedom with these government rules about land, especially for like churches and temples and stuff.
It comes up a lot more than you think.
Yeah, totally. And we've got a bunch of stuff to help us unpack this whole thing. So we have a really in-depth case brief and a standard one, and also some guidance that's, you know, specifically for this podcast.
I'm ready to dive in.
Me too. So to set the stage about what was going on with this temple in Hawaii.
Okay, so the Korean Buddhist Day Wonsa Temple in Honolulu, they had this plan to expand.
Makes sense.
They were in a residential zone, which, that means there are rules about what you can build there.
Right.
But they got a permit to build a hall, and the permit said the maximum height was 66 feet.
Okay, standard stuff.
Right. But when they finished building this hall, well, it was a lot taller than 66 feet.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it ended up being 74 to 75 feet tall.
Wow, so they were way over the limit.
Yeah, pretty significantly.
So what happened? Did the city just like let it slide?
No, not quite. The Honolulu Department of Land Utilization, we call them the DLU, they issued a notice of violation.
Okay, so basically saying, hey, you guys messed up.
Exactly. They were told their building wasn't following the rules and they had to do something about it.
So what did the temple do?
Well, they applied for what's called a variance.
Okay, so that's like asking for an exception to the rules, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They were hoping to get permission to keep their hall at that height, even though it broke the rules.
Didn't work.
Unfortunately for the temple, no, it didn't. The DLU held a public hearing and decided not to give them the variance.
Oh man, that's rough. But I guess that's not the end of the story, right?
Nope. The temple appealed the decision first. They went to the Zoning Board of Appeals, which we call the ZBA. But
Okay.
the ZBA also said no to the variance.
So they lost again? Did they just give up at that point?
They were persistent. They actually took their case to the circuit court.
Wow, they were really fighting for this.
They were, but the circuit court also ruled against them.
Oof, three strikes, you're out.
Well, not quite in legal cases. There's often one more swing you can take.
Okay. And I bet that's where the Hawaii Supreme Court comes in.
You got it. That's the highest court in the state, and that's
Yeah.
where this case finally landed.
Makes sense. So by the time it got to the Hawaii Supreme Court, what were the main points the temple was making? Like, what were their arguments?
They had two big ones.
Right.
Okay, the first one was about something called procedural due process.
Okay, I remember that from law school, something about fairness in legal proceedings. Yeah.
Exactly. And the temple was arguing that the hearings they had at the local level with the DLU and the ZBA weren't fair
Why not?
because they weren't allowed to cross-examine the people who were against their request for a variance.
Oh, that makes sense. Like, if someone is saying stuff that could hurt your case, you'd want to be able to question them about it, right?
Precisely, it's a fundamental principle of fairness in our legal system. You have the right to confront your accusers or those opposing you.
Okay, so that was one argument. What was the other big one?
The second one was all about freedom of religion, specifically the free exercise clause of the First Amendment.
Okay, one of the biggies.
Right. And they were saying that these height restrictions from the city were putting a big burden on their religious practices.
Interesting how so.
So they brought in some experts to explain that in their religion, the balance and harmony of their temple buildings is super important.
Okay.
They said it's not just about aesthetics. It's actually crucial for reaching certain meditative states that are like key to their Buddhist practice. This branch is called Chogi Buddhism.
Oh, so they weren't just saying the building looked nice or taller. They were saying it was like essential for their religious practice.
That's right. It was more than just a design preference. It was tied to their beliefs and how they practice their religion.
That's a really interesting argument. So how did the Hawaii Supreme Court deal with these two arguments? Should we start with the procedural due process one?
Yeah, let's tackle that first. So the court looked at it through the lens of flexible due process.
Flexible due process. Okay, I don't think I've come across that specific term before.
It's a way of saying that due process, the idea of fairness in legal proceedings, it's not like a one-size-fits-all thing.
Okay, that makes sense.
The specific procedures you need to make things fair can be different depending on what's going on and what's at stake.
So like a full-blown trial isn't always necessary.
Exactly, especially in situations like this with zoning decisions, it's more administrative, you know.
Right, it's not like a criminal case or something.
Right, and the court actually said, quote, due process calls for protections the situation demands, end quote.
I like that it's a pretty clear statement.
It is. So in the Temples case, they said, okay, you didn't get to cross-examine everyone who was against your variance.
Right.
But you did get other chances to present your side of things. You submitted evidence. You had your own witnesses. You were able to challenge the stuff the other side was saying.
So it wasn't like they were completely silenced.
Exactly. And the court decided that was enough to make things fair in this specific situation.
Okay, so the court was basically saying that even though they didn't get to cross-examine everyone, the Temple still had a real chance to defend themselves.
Right, and for law students out there, this is a good reminder that due process can look different depending on the context.
It's not always about having a jury trial and all that.
Exactly. It's about making sure everyone gets a fair shot to be heard.
Gotcha. Okay, so what about the Temple's other argument, the one about the height restriction being a burden on their religious practice? That feels like the heart of this case.
Yeah, this is where things get really interesting. Okay. This is where the court used the substantial burden test.
Okay, I've heard of that one. It's a pretty important test in these kinds of religious freedom cases, right?
Definitely. It's used all the time. So basically, the court has to figure out three things.
Lay it on me.
First is the government action, like the height restriction in this case, based on a sincere religious belief.
Okay, so did the Temple really believe that the height of the building was important for their religious practice?
Right.
Okay, what's the second thing?
Second is this government action putting a substantial burden on the exercise of that belief.
Meaning, is it actually preventing them from practicing their religion?
Exactly.
Good. And what's the third thing?
And if the answer to the first two is yes, then the court has to see if the government has a really good reason, a compelling interest for doing what it's doing.
Okay, so even if it does burden someone's religious practice, the government might still be able to justify it.
Right, if the reason is strong enough.
Makes sense. So in this case, how did the court apply the substantial burden test?
Well, first they agreed that the Temple sincerely believed in the importance of balance and harmony in their buildings.
Okay, so they passed that part of the test.
Yes. But then things got tricky when it came to the second part, the substantial burden part.
Okay, so did the court think the height restriction was actually preventing the Temple from practicing their religion?
They did not. The court said that while the Temple's belief was sincere, they saw the balance and harmony thing more as a design preference rather than a core religious practice.
Okay, so something that would be nice to have, but not absolutely essential.
Exactly. The court said that the extra height might have made things look and feel better for their meditation. But it wasn't actually stopping them from practicing their religion in a fundamental way.
So the building wasn't so short that they couldn't do their Buddhist rituals or anything.
Right. The court even said, I'm quoting here, height restrictions didn't stop the Temple from practicing Buddhism.
That's a pretty blunt way of putting it.
It is. But it highlights a key point. The government might make it harder or less ideal to practice your religion.
Right.
But unless they're actually preventing you from doing it, that's not usually enough to win a religious freedom case.
Interesting. So they drew a line between something that makes your practice better versus something that actually allows you to practice.
Exactly.
Okay, so the Temple didn't pass the substantial burden part of the test. Did the court still look at whether the city had a compelling interest in enforcing the height restriction?
They did. But because the Temple already failed one part of the test, this part wasn't as important.
Okay, but they still talked about it.
Yeah, they said, look, the city has a big interest in keeping its residential neighborhoods, you know, nice and livable. Zoning laws are there to protect property values, make sure things look good, prevent overcrowding, you know, all that stuff.
Right, like you don't want a factory popping up in the middle of a neighborhood.
Exactly. So the court was basically saying that the city's interest in enforcing its zoning rules was a strong one, and it outweighed the Temple's desire to have a taller building.
Gotcha. So it sounds like the Temple faced an uphill battle on that free exercise claim. They couldn't prove the height restriction actually blocked their religious practice. And even if they had, the city had a really good reason for having the rule in the first place.
It's a tough standard to meet.
Okay, so we've talked about the temple's two main arguments, but what about the actual denial of the variance itself? Did the court say anything specific about that?
Oh, yeah, they definitely did. They went back to the city charter and looked at the rules for giving out variances.
Okay.
And there were three main things you need to show to get a variance.
All right, hit me with them.
One, you have to prove that you can't use your land in a reasonable way if you don't get the variance.
Like you can't really do anything with it.
Right. Two, you have to show that your hardship is because of something unique about your property, not because you messed up somehow.
Okay, so no self-inflicted wounds.
Exactly. And three, you have to prove that giving you the variance won't mess up the character of the neighborhood.
So, like, it won't make the neighborhood look totally different or change the vibe?
Right. So the court went through each of these points and basically said the temple didn't meet any of them.
Really? So they struck out on all three?
Yep. For the first one, the court said the temple could still use its property for religious purposes, even if the building wasn't as tall as they wanted.
Okay, fair enough.
For the second one, they said the hardship was definitely self-created because the temple knew the height limit and they built the hall too tall anyway.
So they brought this problem on themselves.
Exactly. And for the third one, the court agreed with the DLU and the ZBA that having a super tall building there would change the look and feel of the neighborhood in a bad way.
So it sounds like the court really sided with the city on this whole variance thing.
They did. They basically said the city was right to deny the variance based on the rules they have in place.
Gotcha. So we've gone through like all the details of this case now, but I'm wondering, what are the big takeaways for law students? Like, what legal principles can they learn from this?
Oh, there are so many good ones in this case.
Awesome. Let's hear them.
Okay, so first we've got the neutral laws doctrine.
Okay, what's that one about?
Basically, it says that if a law applies to everyone equally, it doesn't matter if it affects someone's religious practices.
So, like, a law can't single out a specific religion?
Right. It has to be neutral.
Gotcha.
And in this case, the zoning laws weren't specifically targeting religious buildings or anything.
Right. They applied to everyone in that zone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So even though the height restriction ended up affecting the temple's plans, the court said that doesn't automatically mean it was unconstitutional.
So the law itself was okay.
Right. It was neutral and generally applicable.
Okay. What else?
Another big one is agency deference.
Okay. Remind me what deference means again.
So it basically means that courts will usually trust the decisions made by government agencies, especially when those agencies are like the experts on something.
Okay, so like the DLU and the ZBA, they deal with zoning and land use all the time.
Right, they're the pros. So courts won't usually overturn their decisions unless they were like totally unreasonable or made a big mistake.
So the court was basically saying, we're not zoning experts. We're going to trust that the DLU and the ZBA knew what they were doing.
Exactly. And the legal term for that is arbitrary and capricious.
Right. So if the agency's decision wasn't arbitrary and capricious, the court will usually uphold it.
Precisely.
Gotcha. Okay, so we talked about neutral laws and agency deference. What else is there?
Well, we also touched on this a bit earlier, but there's the idea of harmless error.
Okay, so that's about procedural stuff, right?
Right. Remember how the temple argued that they didn't get a fair hearing because they couldn't cross-examine everyone?
Yeah.
So even if the court had agreed with them on that point, they still might not have overturned the whole decision.
Why not?
Because of harmless error, basically the court has to decide if that procedural mistake actually affected the outcome of the case.
So if the mistake didn't really change anything, then it's not a big deal.
Right. It's not enough to throw out the whole thing.
Makes sense. Okay. What other legal lessons are there?
Well, this case is also a great example of how the substantial burden test works in real life.
Right. We talked about the three parts of the test, but it's one thing to know the test and another to see how it plays out.
Exactly. And this case shows how important it is for religious groups to prove that a law is actually preventing them from practicing their religion in a meaningful way.
Not just making things a little harder or less convenient.
Right. And it's not enough to just say, oh, this rule makes it harder for us to express our beliefs.
You have to show that it's actually blocking a core religious practice.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's a good one about the substantial burden test. Anything else?
Yeah, the whole issue of self-created hardship is a big one, too.
Right. The temple kind of shot themselves in the foot by building the hall too tall in the first place.
They did. And the court was pretty clear about that. They said you can't break the rules and then ask for an exception because you broke the rules.
Sounds fair to me.
It does promote accountability.
Exactly. Right? So to sum it all up, what was the final outcome of this case?
The Hawaii Supreme Court sided with the city all the way to Reyes. They upheld the decisions of the lower courts and the agencies.
So the temple lost on all their arguments.
They couldn't get their variants, and they couldn't convince the court that their religious freedom was being violated.
Okay, so what's the big lesson here? Like, what's the main takeaway for law students?
I think the biggest takeaway is that courts will usually prioritize things like zoning laws and land use regulations over claims of religious exemption.
Unless the religious group can show that the law is directly and substantially blocking their ability to practice their religion.
Precisely, the bar is pretty high.
Yeah, it sounds like this has been a really interesting look at this case.
I'm glad you think so.
I do, and I think it's super relevant for law students who are interested in this whole area of religious freedom and how it interacts with other laws.
Absolutely. It's a hot topic these days.
Totally. And for anyone who wants to go even deeper on this stuff, I have a suggestion.
Hit me.
Go read Employment Division v. Smith.
Oh, yeah, that's a classic.
It is, and it deals with some similar issues about neutral laws and religious freedom.
It's about Native American religious practices and peyote, right?
Exactly. They were using peyote as part of their ceremony, but it was against the law in Oregon.
Right. Drug laws are generally Mescal.
Exactly. So it's a really interesting case to compare to this one.
They both show how the courts try to balance these competing interests.
Right. And it's never easy.
Nope.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with something to think about.
I'm all ears.
So we saw how important it is to prove a substantial burden on religious practice if you want to challenge a law on religious freedom grounds.
Right, that was the key issue in this case.
Exactly. So here's the question. What kinds of land use restrictions do you think could actually be challenged successfully? Like, what would be such a big burden that it would trump the government's interest in zoning and planning?
That is a good question.
And how can religious groups make sure they're protected while also being good neighbors and respecting the rules everyone has to follow?
Lots to ponder.
It's a really complex issue, and this case is just one piece of the puzzle.
But it's a fascinating piece.
Totally. And I think it's one that will keep coming up as we try to figure out how to balance all these different rights and interests in our society.
You know, you're absolutely right. It's a conversation that's not going away anytime soon.
Nope. And hopefully this deep dive has given everyone some food for thought.
Some brain food.
Exactly. Thanks for joining me today.
Always a pleasure.
And to everyone listening, keep those legal minds sharp.
Yeah, those arguments balanced.
We'll catch you on the next deep dive.
Voila.